Welcome to Box Office Battles, where we take forgotten movies, underappreciated classics,
and the other one.
I had it. I was doing dramatic tension. Dude, you fucked me up.
Oh, I was just
box
being an
office
a-hole.
Bombs, guys.
I was just being an a-hole.
And we pit them together for the ride to be on Mount Valhalla. I'm Biggs.
I'm the Beard.
I'm Zach.
So today we are doing the films of Albert Brooks.
Yeah.
In my corner, but I'll be going second because I said so. Defending your life.
I'll allow it.
And yes.
I like how you're celebrating as if I was mounting a counterattack. And I will be covering This Is 40.
All right, start us out, dude.
So you got to give me a minute to catch my breath. So This Is 40 is a standalone sequel to Knocked Up, centering around the Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann characters from that film as they reach their 40th birthdays, which takes place over the span of about a week in the film. They both have their 40th birthday in the same week, and how the stress of their insecurity about aging, their uncertainty towards the future, stress between their relationships, stress with their daughters, and stress from work is all sort of coming together and creating an almost prototypical midlife crisis in a fascinating way, especially knowing it comes from Judd Apatow, who has a very specific perspective, and it's a perspective that's tended to work in the box office in the past. The people seem to like Mr. Apatow.
Yeah, it wasn't a bomb.
No, this is not here because it's a box office bomb. This film was chosen. Now, I'd never seen this film prior to watching it for the episode. I am told it is underappreciated, so that is why it is here tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's got a 51% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yep.
That I was kind of surprised it's that low.
Wow.
Yep.
That seems unappreciated.
Yeah. I should say so. That's why we're here.
All right. So my movie is Defending Your Life. So basically what this movie is about is Albert Brooks dies. He's got a character name. I don't remember what it is, but it's Albert Brooks. He's the same guy in every movie. And he dies. And so the whole goal of when you die is to get to the next level of consciousness. And to get to the next level of consciousness, a big thing that you have to do is conquer your fears. Albert Brooks is not somebody who conquered his fears very well. He also meets Meryl Streep, who becomes his love interest. And I think it's one of the few movies she wasn't nominated for an Oscar, guys. So you got to give the movie credit for that. So Meryl Streep lived this charmed life where she faced up to every fear, and Albert Brooks did not. He was constantly scared, but he falls in love with this woman. Rip Torn plays his lawyer because...
Can I just say, yes. I'm so sorry, but... So he meets this woman, Rip Torn, who plays his...
That's right, dude. I'm Shatnering it.
So he meets this woman, Rip Torn.
I mean, if you want to fragment it, sure.
That's how it sounded in my head. That's how it sounded in my head. And I just want people to appreciate the image of Rip Torn in a dress. It's a wonderful image.
Okay, Rip Torn is amazing in this movie. He is so funny. This is my go-to movie whenever I think about Rip Torn. This is the first movie I think of. And by the way, it's a great name. Rip Torn.
Fantastic.
You can't
name.
Fucking write a name like that. Like, nobody would believe that's an actual person. Turns out it's his real name, guys. Anyway, so Rip Torn.
So shout out to his parents.
That's
good
right.
For them.
Good job, guys. You had the last name Torn. You gave him Rip. That was smart. So he plays his lawyer, who's basically slimy as hell and trying to get him through this process, get him elevated to the next level, even though you can tell pretty quickly from the beginning he should not move up. They're also kind of second class citizens in this, like, I guess it's sort of like a heaven way station in a way, because they go around and everybody makes fun of their little brains all the time because they only use 10% of their brains, and everybody else uses, like, what? They rate you by how much of your brain you use.
The average person uses, what, 3%, and then most of them were, like, at 50-something percent.
Right. And so they constantly make fun of him. He's eating a food for lunch, Rip Torn is, and he's like, yeah, it's really good. And he's like, oh, can I try some of it? He's like, oh, you wouldn't like it. Your little brain can't wrap itself around it. And he's like, well, let me try that. And, of course, he spits it all out because he can't constantly like pull apart the flavors to make it taste the way it should. So it's a really funny movie. Basically, at the end, he's being denied moving up, and he sees Meryl Streep going off in a like kind of a trolley, like a light
a tram.
Car. Yeah, a tram to the next stage of evolution. He jumps onto the tram to try and get with her, even though he's not supposed to be there. But because he faced his fear, guys, they let him on the tram. And it turns out the court was watching the whole time, and they were happy with his progress. So it ends happy. It's a really funny movie. It's definitely an underrated Albert Brooks movie. It's one of those ones that was really big at the time. Like, it wasn't anything that burned down the box office by any means, but people really enjoyed it. It was on HBO for years and years and years. And then it just sort of, there's been so many comedies since then. I think it's just one of those ones that's, you know, people have forgotten about. So I wanted to bring it back up because it's a great movie.
So one of the things I loved most about This Is 40 is how perfectly cast the actors were. And I don't just mean that in that they were they cast good actors, although they did. I also mean they fit so perfectly into these roles they're playing. Paul Rudd gets to sort of do what Paul Rudd does best, which is balance his inherent likability and sort of playful energy and balance it with a character who can sort of be a little bit dismissive or a little bit self-absorbed. And it really allows him to play with that dynamic in himself in an interesting way. Similarly, Leslie Mann gets to play a character who, rather than just being sort of the negative wet blanket shrew, it's a really interesting multi-dimensional character, as she's sort of this woman torn between her rational side and her slightly emotionally volatile side.
She plays my wife.
And
I think she plays wife in general.
Yeah, no, dude.
And there's certainly truth to that. I would say there's a lot of truth to that. Luckily, it's written and portrayed in a way that gives it more depth than sort of just feeling like a generic stand-in. It really does feel more relatable in a way that women in comedy, or wives specifically, I should say, wives specifically in comedies tend to be written. Albert Brooks has an amazing role as a dickhead dad who borrows tens of thousands of dollars of money and can't tell his triplets apart. It's really great. It's good stuff.
So my movie is written by Albert Brooks as well as directed and acted in it. Also done a really good job of casting the film. Meryl Streep does a great job of this woman who seems just a little too good for him. She's handled everything in her life. She's not a damsel in distress at any moment. If anything, Albert Brooks is closer to the damsel in distress because dude can't do anything right. And I really appreciate the tone of the movie above all else. Like, this, the tone, it's really something to write a movie where you're the center of that movie, and yet you get to make this wry, like, sarcastic remarks at everything, and yet you are far and away the stupidest person in your movie. Like, not everybody does it, and it's not done in a stupid way either, which I really appreciate it. Like, it's all done in a very smart way, but seeing this guy who is smart and quick and witty, and yet he is the worst person in this movie, I love it, man. And Rip Torn really shines in this movie. I mean, he just, every line of dialogue he has in this movie, even if it's just something inane, just makes me laugh. I mean, the way he handles his courtroom dramas, I wish he was on Law and Order. If he was on Law and Order, it would not have been canceled.
So one of the most common complaints of Judd Apatow movies, and one that would probably be the first or a first complaint someone would go to when talking about This Is 40, is probably the length. And there's certainly an argument to be made that the film is a tad over long. But one thing I will say works in its favor within the length is that Judd Apatow has made great strides in the pacing of his screenplays. There would be a lot of times in older movies, even when they were great, where you would sort of feel a lot of scenes felt super compressed and needed a chance to breathe more than they got, and other films sort of meander in ways that could definitely be trimmed down. And he's got it paced in a much more I guess organic way. We're set up with this approximately week long timeline, and it does very much feel like you're zeroing in on a couple's most hectic week, where you get to see every side of the dynamic of their relationship. And because he gave himself a smart time frame, it allows the film to sort of unfold in a much more organic way instead of sort of feeling forced to get from plot point to plot point. It really does feel like you're watching a week in someone's life unfold rather than a very structured, cinematic, rushed scene, overlong scene, sort of, I guess, clumsy-handed way. And that's something I really appreciate about the film, and I don't think it gets enough credit for, is you really see great growth in Judd Apatow's pacing, and it incredibly benefits the film.
You know, another film that people aren't necessarily going to talk about with pacing is Defending Your Life. It's deserved. There's no point in that movie where I'm sitting there watching it like, I wish they just trimmed this scene. Like, it's done really well. It seems like most scenes are done for the last, but they still push the plot across. And they do a pretty good job of it. I mean, like, it's a very general idea. And then you get to see these characters play around within this idea. So really, he just cuts scenes around what's funny and works in the scene, because you know he gets to point A, he's gonna get to point B, you know that that's coming at some point, so it's everywhere in between that it goes, and that's kind of the genius of how it's cut, is it's cut around these jokes because they don't need to move the story. We know the general story. It's also, I believe, a week in his life, kind of afterlife in a way.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm
9 days.
It's 9 days. Okay. Oh, that's right, because that's a long time.
Because they made a specific point, like, throughout the movie, it's like 9 days is going to be.
That's
like,
right, because it's typically like 4 or 5, right?
Right.
So he really fucked up his life. But that's the thing too, like, there, because of the way that this is designed, they're able to just focus on the comedy, and there's still character growth and everything that's in there, but it's inherent within the plot. Like, you know, he's not going to take that big step forward until the end of the movie, so we get to watch these characters interact and play and make a lot of really funny jokes, and that's something I also appreciate about the movie.
I'm going to take a break in serious arguments to sort of, I guess, pander would be the word. I'm going to pander to those of us out there. I'm going to pander to all of our inner Adrian. And I'm just going to say that Megan Fox is very possibly at her hottest in This Is 40. I'm not normally a Megan Fox fan, but I'll say, she showed up for this movie. And she showed up. And you know what? She is used well within the script, too. She gets to come off, if not amazingly, she comes off as relatively likable and charming on screen. And she gets in a few good comedic moments with the tag team of Jason Segel and Chris O'Dowd, who have a lot of fun scenes together in the film. And it's when she's put in the right context, you can see the traits that got her to where she got in her career, even though those traits to date hadn't really shown up in her on-screen work. It was a nice change to see.
Hey, it was Leslie Mann playing with her boobs for a while.
And that did happen, and it was a good time.
You're right, that did happen, it was a good time, but unfortunately, if you let your gaze linger just a little bit longer, you know, Megan Fox has toe thumbs. I don't know how to, like, gently prance around this. She has toe thumbs, and it's horrifying, and it belongs in a horror movie.
It's called Jennifer's Body.
Exactly.
She's pretty hot in
exactly
that one, too, now that I think.
Yeah, she
it.
Was.
She kind of was until you see the toe thumbs.
So there's something about the sensibility of This Is 40 that might be what resonated with me most, and it's sort of a combination of the tone and the juxtaposition of two styles of comedy, where to an extent, the film is a perversion of, like, the classic family sitcom. You know, you sort of have the archetypes there, but it's done in sort of, it's done with a fearlessness that you don't see out of a lot of family comedies. And it's done with an unwillingness to shy away from the awkward and uncomfortable aspects of life that really rounded out in a way that there's a lot of ways this story and this script could have gone wrong, even in the hands of the very capable people it was in the hands of. And it's good. It's sometimes it's just good to know that when faced with very obvious decisions, people out there still have the common sense to make the smart decisions.
So what I really appreciate about Defending Your Life is also the tone. It could have been very easy to make this kind of a saccharine sweet movie, and it is sweet at the end. I'm not debating that. But the tone of the movie is more, it's more the sarcastic thing that I really just love. Like, I love how everything is just making these observations about things behind you and kind of tearing it down and laughing about it, even though the world's laughing at you. Like, it's not saccharine at all, but man, it really could have been. And I think for a lot of directors, if they had been handed this movie, that's what it would have become. I mean, they would have gotten like Mark Wahlberg and Mila Kunis or something, and it would have been really sweet at the end. But no, they had the courage in the 80s to not cast Mila Kunis and Mark Wahlberg and go with Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep, which is like not a couple you would think about being together. But they have a lot of chemistry and they really make it work because it is a movie that sort of plays with your cerebellum a little bit. And so you need two actors who are very much on their toes and, you know, can handle the material and be smart as well as funny. And they knock it out of the park. I mean, the tone is amazing in this movie.
I guess the last thing I want to bring up is that Judd Apatow found a way to weave some really cool music into the movie through Ryan Adams and Graham Parker, and that shouldn't go unappreciated.
I just want to say toe thumbs.
Ooh, shots fired. So I've listened to both of these arguments. You know, both of these movies actually had relatable elements to them. I'm going to base this on comedy. And for that, I'm going to give this one to This Is 40.
Yay, I'm a winner.
And what it's going to really went down to was the comedy in This Is 40. There was a couple of different levels of comedy. There was just straight out humor. I mean, there was some slapstick moments in that. There was also sexual humor with the locked door BJ.
Hilarious.
And there was also...
And have lived that in my life, I might add.
I don't know if I've really felt that, but...
No, I've had locked door BJ happen. It's happened.
There's been locked door sex that's happened.
That's happened too.
So, I mean, there was definitely some relatable humor there. And there was also like some of the other... I mean, with the stuff with the father and there was a lot of subtle humor. And... that's where I felt like Defending Your Life, it was mostly a lot of subtle humor. There wasn't a lot of other humor.
It's all smart guy humor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no, like, banana peel moment in that movie. There's a few of them in This Is 40. That's not to
tear. No, like, sometimes you want that. Like, sometimes that's what you want.
Like, I've heard writers of The Simpsons say The Graduate has every kind of joke in that movie, which is true. You've got every kind of joke you can think of. Mm-hmm. This Is 40 is similar. It's got every kind of joke you can think of. Defending Your Life is very specific. It's all smart guy humor.
Yeah.
Like, if you like 21 Jump Street on the ironic level, Defending Your Life is kind of for you. Like, it's that same kind of wry humor.
But, and yeah, that's how I felt with that one. So I really enjoyed it, but I'm going to have to give this one to This Is 40.
All right, well, how would you grade them?
This Is 40. I'm going to start with that one since it just won. I'm going to give that one an excellent. There wasn't any point in that movie where I really just felt like I didn't want to finish watching this movie. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, Zach brought up the pacing of the movie, and that is one thing that Judd Apatow has struggled with in some of his movies where there's scenes that are just like, oh, just get through this one to the next one. Beyond that, I really relate to a lot of this movie. And then some of the scenes were great, like where they got stoned in the hotel room on the weekend.
Yeah.
I've been to that point in my life. Not necessarily stoned recently, but just like going having a drunken weekend in Great Falls sort of weekend.
And then right back to reality.
Yep.
Yeah, I get it.
And so I'm going to say an excellent on that one. Defending Your Life, I'm actually going to go satisfactory minus on that one.
Ooh, you didn't like it that much.
And I would probably grade it higher, but I was just, when I watched this, I was not in the greatest state of mind because my Netflix was not working. I thought my like whole life was crashing down at this point. And so I resorted to watching a DVD.
I feel bad for you that your self-esteem is tied in with your Netflix, dude.
Well, it's like,
I get it.
I get a lot of, you know, enjoyment out of watching Netflix, and the thought of it not working like down the road is kind of depressing.
You don't have to explain that to me. I get it.
But that being said, I felt like a lot of the humor was pretty dry. I know you had made the comment that Rip Torn, this would be your go-to, but Dodgeball.
That was mine as well.
Dodgeball's
pretty funny, but he holds...
Like, if you say Rip Torn, I think a Dodgeball.
That's... All right, that's fair enough. I mean, that's an opinion thing. And I love Dodgeball the movie. I'm talking no shit about Dodgeball the movie. But the difference is like, Dodgeball the movie is practically a cameo. Like, he's not in it very often. It's probably, like, 5 minutes of screen time. Like, Defending Your Life, he's got to hold down a good 45 minutes in that movie.
I didn't feel like it was that much. I feel like that's it was 15 it to was. 20.
That's how but good so- it was. It didn't feel that long. Most of that movie is courtroom scenes.
And the courtroom scenes were great, but even, like, he missed a day or two along the way. Although I thought it was kind of funny when they brought in the other step-in lawyer that, was just
really bad
terrible.
One.
But everybody, like, he uses 60% of his brain.
All right, Zach, how about you?
So I'm going to start with Defending Your Life, which I have to give an excellent to. I'm a big, big fan of that movie. Big fan of that movie. Even beyond all the cool stuff about it you mentioned, just the inherent premise of the movie really resonates with me. It's something that grips with me in a lot of stuff I think about and a lot of stuff I like in terms of humor. It's very much a movie that has its hooks in me. So I have to give an excellent to it. I just watched This Is 40, like right before we came here. And I could talk a whole lot about it. I'm going to keep this to two things before I give my grade. And know that they're both going to sound sort of negative. My feeling on this movie is not leaning negative at all. But I got a lot of the positives out when I was defending it. And so now I'm going to cover sort of things I didn't like about it. So the way the first thing is, I sort of feel of three minds of this movie. There's a segment of stuff I flat out liked about it. There's a third of stuff which some of it I liked, some of it I didn't like, but all of it I'm not in a place in my life where I have the experiences for those to really relate to me. And so the stuff that I like in that, I'm certain I will still like if I get to that point in my life. And the stuff I don't like, I could see myself growing to appreciate more. So I don't want to categorize them with the third, which is the stuff I didn't like. And I feel like I just wouldn't like even if I grew into some of those experiences. It just wouldn't work for me in the context of the movie. Which brings me to part two, which is one of those things specifically. I've been silent on this topic too long, and it's made me a hypocrite. Because I give Will Smith shit for putting his kids in movies. Judd Apatow, this has to end. Your kids are not talented. I can give you putting Leslie Mann in all your movies a pass because she has a talented. She has a completely strong career that's not related to him in any way. Like she has done enough to establish herself as an actress that it's not nepotism. Those kids are not talented. They are not. Well, they might be talented. Acting is not their talent. And like it worked in Knocked Up when they just had to be cute little kids. Now that he's giving them like, oh my God, this movie.
Serious screen time. Yeah.
This movie could have been improved if they cut out every scene with a child that did not involve one of the parents in as well. The movie could have been vastly improved. Like the plot line was useless, regardless of how I feel about the two kids as actors. Like the plot lines didn't add anything that were just the kids. They barely got any resolution, those subplots. And again, the kids are just a real stink bomb of a performance. They're just not good. And that's all I have to say about that. My rating, I was sort of flitting between a range of satisfactory minus to satisfactory plus. I don't feel I can give it an excellent at this point in my life. I think I'm going to go with a solid satisfactory with a caveat, which is being that if you ask me again in 5, 10, 15, 20 years,
give it
that
10.
There. And that's my thing 10. Is like, I give it this rating with the full understanding that it will improve with time for me, but we're not at that time. So it's sort of unfair for me to project out.
Okay. I said pretty much everything I wanted to say about Defending Your Life. So I'm just going to give it an excellent. I picked that movie against This Is 40 because I looked at This Is 40 is an excellent movie, and so I wanted to put an excellent movie above that. I don't want to pick between those two.
Sure.
Like, I love them both. I'll argue it for the sake of the show.
Of course, yes.
I love both of those comedies, and I think that they both work, and they're both timeless in a way. Even though This Is 40 is very specific to the time it's in, I think it's still going to be relatable, because where it's really specific for the time
is with the stuff emotions. With the
music industry, I was going to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's failing right now. It'll probably look different in like 20 years.
Super
but
different.
What they're looking at is like something specific to right
those
now.
Relationships that being said, and emotions if, will be the same in 20
and
years.
And if you're working in a job where the field's not going so great, that's something you can relate to, however it affects your job. Like, the Paul Rudd has got that kind of in spades. I guess, like, I didn't see the negatives with the kids just because they were fucking annoying, which I thought...
yeah.
But I thought that was the point. Like, and I... Granted, I haven't looked at this through the lens of, like, these kids are good or bad actors, but the way that it affected me when I watched them was, yeah. like, the kids reminded me of my kids, which was fucking annoying sometimes, and I love my kids, but... kids are kind of annoying sometimes. And I thought that was kind of the point of a lot of the movie. So it didn't. Now, once again, I'm not saying they're good actresses, because sure. I haven't watched it since it came out in theaters.
And my thing is, like, because I'm so fresh, I can isolate specific moments.
Right. But that being said, they did what they needed to do for me being a dad. It also speaks to me on a lot of levels. Which you've said, like, because we talked about this before, and, like, I think I rated it one of my top 10 movies. It was
that
it
year
2012 when it came out. 2012. Okay, so I ranked it one of my top 10 movies, and it was because it really spoke to me in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like the Paul Rudd character,
you know,
in, like, almost every way. There were so many things that I loved about that movie, and I never really thought about the pacing or any of those things, and I'd probably have to see it again to sort of judge on that, but it felt real, a lot of the stuff
yes,
that was going
absolutely.
On, which is why I related to it, especially the stuff, and it's sort of an unsung scene, but there's a scene where they're talking with the principal.
That's an amazing... That's not an unsung...
Nobody ever talks about it. Like, they always talk about other stuff.
The only reason I say that's not the unsung scene is because the end credits is set to an unedited version of that scene.
Oh, okay.
So that's the only reason I say it. Like, it's pretty well sung by the people who made the movie.
Right, but I mean, like, a lot of people came out of the movie. They never
focused
on
other scenes.
That is fucking... I cannot explain... Like, this is a feeling you could almost only get if you're a parent and you have to go into the office and talk with them because one of your kids got in trouble. Like, I could fucking identify so much with those parents in that scene, because you just fucking, you're upset and you want to defend your kid, and you're fucking upset at your kid too, and it's like jumble the fucking shit that's going on. And I thought they did such a good job of, like, hashing that out in the movie. So there's, like, a lot of these weird little specific things in the movie that I could identify them with, that just added up to an excellent for me. Like, I love both of these movies. I really do.
Yeah.
So I would have been happy no matter who won.
You know, it's interesting. The one thing in This 40 that really related with me, and it felt like kind of just a throwaway scene in the movie, was where they were discussing, like, music with their kids. And
yeah.
Oh, that's
and
good stuff.
Where he's like, he puts in the, I think it's Alice in Chains, and he's just, and it's, I thought it was a great, I really enjoy it. I enjoy Alice in Chains, and I really, like, connected with that. And they put this, like, sappy pop song on.
Yep.
And you're just like, oh, I've dealt with that so much in my life.
I have. What I will say about it is Paul Rudd is more the childish aspect of that, where, like, you're getting mad and you're, like, yelling at people. I have striven to not be that dude. And I know a lot of people who are that guy too, who are just like, your music sucks. This is real and this means something. Like, I know better than that, because I don't know. I just do. Like, I don't want to ever be that guy.
And
I feel that way. I'll rip on Taylor Swift.
And it wasn't like that that, like, really got to me, but, like, I mean,
that feeling of being on emotion.
Just thinking, like, my kids and my wife don't listen to Pink Floyd.
No.
The way I do.
No, I know. My my kids.
I can sit down and put an actual record on my record player and just listen to an album. My kids, it's like going through YouTube, like the music channels, and listening to like the top 40 stuff of what's hit right now.
Yep. And they know the names of the shit and they're just looking it up. They don't have to deal with the TV or anything, which I get. That's like a generational thing. We would have done that shit if we'd had that available too, I think, for a while. But yeah, that's a hard one because I've got music that I was just talking with my wife last night because I was talking about how much I love jazz. And I'm just like, you have no idea how much I listen to jazz and like what a sacrifice it was to me. Basically drive it out of my life when I got married because ain't nobody in my house want to listen to jazz, dude. Not one person. I can't even get the 5-year-old on board, like for even a second. Like, they all hate jazz. And so it's like, you know, I get that, dude. I really, really, really resonate with that. But I also refuse to, like, be the one who's, like, ripping on their music and sounding like the old man and all crotchety. Like, you need to like this. This is the only good music. Because I know better. Music means different things to different people. And most women, not all of them, but most of them, they like songs to dance to. They don't really care about what the song's saying. Guys care about what the song's saying. We could give a fuck less about dancing to it most of the time, right?
I would say I give a lot of fucks about dancing mainly because I have to actively avoid it.
Fair enough. That's a corner I didn't think of. Well, any other profound thoughts from these movies?
You know, Albert Brooks, Judd Apatow, keep making stuff. You're doing okay. You got a good track record.
Keep going with it. So fill those seats so we don't have to.
Hello, what can I do for you today?
Well, I am looking for Christmas presents for my family. Just, I really let it go this year. Do you have anything good for me?
Of course, the We Had a Good Life podcast, which you can find on the Not Safer Network.
A podcast? I guess I was thinking more like a Furby, maybe?
Maybe Montucky Skies is more up your alley.
Is that also a podcast? Because again, I'm looking for something a little more tangible.
Podcast? Why, speak no further. We've got Box Office Battle.
You know, I gotta say, I'm beginning to feel like you're not listening to me. Again, looking for gifts like I can put in a box or a bag and wrap them for my friends and family.
Perhaps shooting the show would be more your speed.
You know, work with me, not for me. Let's work as a, let's try to attack this as a team. Again, gifts, family.
Is your family into art?
Sure, yeah.
Well, then the Thin Man podcast would be right up your alley.
All right, do you have something that's not a podcast? Because this is a little frustrating.
Real Roulette isn't a podcast anymore, but we do have the archives available on the Not Safer Network.
I mean, it seems pretty clear at this point you have an agenda. You're not going to sell me the toy robot. You're not going to sell me the beautiful handbag. And you're not going to sell me that cool poncho. What are you going to sell me?
That's debatable. It's a podcast about arguing.
You know, I gotta say, at this point, I feel like I understand arguing. So I'm tempted, but again, not what I'm looking for.
So you're looking for something tangible that you can hold in your hands.
Ideally.
Well, why not the Not Safe for Network podcast, which you can hold in your hands on your iPod or MP3 player?
Sure, that counts.